Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to The Extra Point Show with Sneaky Joe DiBiase on WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's a Friday. Looks like apocalyptic outside right now.
Yeah, this is why I'm not playing the typical Friday music.
If you look out, Howard's looking out the window right now because he's like getting prepared for like what he's about to walk out into. You can't really see it from here, but there's a certain direction where like it looks dark skies. There was a radar I saw that didn't look too favorable, but I'm indoors here in this studio for the next 2 hours here. So we got some good stuff coming your way. Golf, hockey, football. 1 year ago, my brother Lou DiBiase, here at WGR, Locked On Eagles, we ranked our top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL under the age of 25. We will do those rankings again, but with quarterbacks under the age of 26, so that way we can keep the same pool of players. We could keep a Mahomes-Allen debate alive, Mayfield in play for this. So he's going to join us coming up at 11. I'll get into a couple of Eagles questions in with him as well, because they are now, they're not the favorites to win the NFC East, but their odds with Dallas have closed. They are very close now. They signed James Bradbury. Nice offseason they're having. So some good questions, I think, coming your way on Philadelphia. But, and I'm not a college football guy. Joe DiBiase here in the Extra Point Show, by the way. 803-0550 for your phone calls today. Zach, are you a big college football guy? I know you're bigger than I am.
I am, yeah.
Like a mega fan? Well, who's your team?
It's Texas.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Strong warning. That Friday before the Red River rivalry against Oklahoma, I will be here in my Earl Campbell jersey, Texas hat.
Oh, wow, I love that, though.
Probably going to wear Texas sweatpants, and I'll wear my Texas shoes.
Or, like, the orange Earl Campbell throwback jersey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That is a great jersey. I mean, I don't have any love towards Texas. Not that I have any hate towards Texas either, I guess. Earl Campbell's before my time, but just something about the sound of, I have an Earl Campbell Texas jersey.
It's nice. It's very nice. I have family that they live in Austin. It's the first like massive college campus I got to see when I was, I think, 10 sure. or 11. So from then on, I've been a Texas fan, and pretty much since then, they've been terrible.
So you might have an opinion on this then that's pretty strong.
I have a very strong opinion on this.
So yesterday, and I'm not a college football guy. I don't really have a team for years. I've really tried to pick a team. That's what I did in the Premier League. I think that in part is a big reason why I became such a big soccer fan was in college, I liked soccer. I was more into international soccer than anything. It would be like once every 4 years I'd be into it. I would enjoy it. But I want to get into the Premier League. Let me pick a team. I picked one. I picked Liverpool. It stuck. I've tried to pick college football teams. For whatever reason, It's probably me, more than anything. It's never really stuck. For a while, I thought, oh, Penn State. I could like them. Then it was Iowa. And then I realized they run the ball 40 times a game, and they only have fullbacks and tight ends. And that wasn't going to last, so Iowa kind of went away. And then I'm like, maybe USC. They hired Lincoln Riley. And
that would be pretty good now. That'd be really good now.
I hate the a lot of things I hate about college sports is like represented in the construct of the SEC. And Nick Saban, and Jimbo Fisher, and Dabo Sweeney, and just this old money type of, you know, holier than thou, I'm the coach, and everyone's beneath me, just college football, college sports. And USC, something about like Lincoln Riley just being like, nah, later Oklahoma. And then watching everyone be mad at him for it. I'm like, I'm kind of into that. And, you know, West Coast, white collar type of team in a sport where it's all blue collar. That kind of appealed to me. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get into USC. completely forgot about everything related to USC until yesterday. They got like the top receiver in the country, Blitnikoff, right?
Blitnikoff winner, yep, from Pittsburgh.
So in the transfer portal.
Yes.
Like, I saw that yesterday. I'm like, oh, yeah, USC. I was going to like them this year. Am I doing that? Like, that was in my head.
I think you
got
to ride this out. I think you got to. They're going to have a great quarterback, potentially an NFL player in Caleb Williams. They're going to have, you know, Fred Blitnikoff winner, which is the best receiver in the country. He's going there. And it's USC. I mean, it's the glitz. It's the glamour. They haven't been good since Matt Leinart was their quarterback. Why not?
The only thing I don't love about it is it really feels like I'm jumping on at a bandwagon type of time.
You are. It's okay. Embrace that.
Listen, I don't know if I like that. I want to go through the... I'm a Bills fan. I'm a Sabres fan, right?
It's like
overrated. That's what who I grew up with. I went through the trepidation. I went through the bad to get to the good, and that's always made it sweeter. I've always
horribly
argued that's made it sweeter.
Horribly
I don't think
overrated.
It's overrated. I don't think it's overrated.
I'm a Texas fan. They just went 5-7 and lost to Kansas in football.
You don't think?
And I'm still there.
You don't think if they this year surprise everyone and win 12 games, 11 games, and are a national championship type of team, that all the years of being 5-7 won't make that sweeter?
It might a little bit.
I think there's something to it.
Horribly obnoxious. I'm going to be bad. Because now I'll have the Bills being good, Texas being good.
Maybe the Sabres get good.
Sabres are on the way up.
Bandits are good. The Amherst are good. Everybody's good around here lately. I mean, the Sabres are getting there. They're not quite there with good, but everyone seems to be getting there. And now you're going to have Texas. Well, this is a hypothetical.
Our quarterback has a mullet. We're back. Texas is back.
We should put it on the poll. Can you be a bad team if your quarterback has a mullet? So, bad timing for me. Like, that was a part of what I liked about Liverpool, was that's a team that could win it. They're good enough to win it. In a sport where that's not everybody. Everybody was not good enough to win it. Leicester City on the side here is the one team that did that. And it was a team that had a drought. That appealed to me. I want to go through it with those fans. Let's build it back up. I like that. I like that journey. And that journey was taken by Liverpool. And I think that has allowed me to grow as such a big fan to where I enjoy watching their games as much as I enjoy watching the Bills and Sabres. Because I went through 5 years of them not being good. And then, boom, they're right there with Manchester City as the best team in soccer, like in the world. And going through those 4 or 5 years of, they're kind of bad, at least by their context, I think that helped to it. If I jump on USC right now, and the first year I follow them, the first year I care about them at all, they're great after being kind of down in the dumps for a while. Something about that.
It'll feel a little gross.
It would feel a little gross. Give me who's down. Texas is down.
Texas is down.
But I can't root Texas.
That's fair. Miami have a great history, and they've essentially not been able to come back since the early 2000s. They're a fun team. I mean, it's Miami. I mean, everyone kind of knows that brand. Don't do any Big Ten schools. If you don't like running the football, don't do it.
That is always my problem. I always like to pick out a Northeast team. Rust Belt, you know? The Buffalo factor there. But, right. This is why Iowa didn't work for me. Because I'm not going to watch you win 17-13 every week. It's not going to happen. You better throw the football. You're going to drive me crazy. I'm done with running the football. I'm done with Doug Marrone and LaShawn McCoy and Marshawn Lynch and Fred Jackson and CJ Spiller and Willis McGahee. That's the Big Ten. Is it everyone in the Big Ten? Or is it just the Big Ten in general?
No, Ohio State likes to throw the ball.
But again, they're kind of that.
It's an NFL team.
They're too good. So that doesn't fit. There's never been a good fit for me. Because I kind of want a Northeast team, but all the Northeast teams are just blue collar running the football, win 17-13. Unless you're Ohio State and you're the best team. So that's not going to work. I want offense. I want offense. I don't really know what I want, I guess. I want offense. I want smart. I want rebellion. I want fighting the construct of college football. That's what I want. Am I getting that a little bit with Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher? Or are they just... I think this is probably more likely. They are now operating in a new system. With NIL, name, image, and likeness. Players can make money on name, image, and likeness, something that should have happened decades ago. And now, the teams that have the boosters and the business affiliations and the ability to hand out sponsorship deals are going to become more powerful because this is an economy. College football is an economy that has been closed to everybody except coaches for eternity. Now, the economy has opened up to players, and now it is becoming a capitalist system where the money will drive in some places where players go. And that has already happened, where the number one recruit in the country went to Jackson State, something that until the last 2 years would have never in a billion years happened. But now it can. Now it did. And now what I've got is Nick Saban, the king of the former system. Him and Dabo Sweeney. Like they ruled the land underneath the pre-NIL college football construct and system. Because one, they're great recruiters. And they've got the power. And it's kind of a snowball effect. You have great teams. You produce enough NFL prospects. Eventually, recruits are going to look at you and say, they churn out NFL prospects. They're going to get me to the NFL. I'm going to win while I'm there. And it's a cycle. They keep the wheel flowing. It just keeps going over every year to year to year. Now, money's involved. And now, Nick Saban is having his power threatened. And he is not, this year, he did not have the number one recruiting class. Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M, a powerful college football program, but not number one. A school where maybe once in a while they could have a number one recruiting class, but this could become a constant because, like Texas, the Longhorns, and Texas A&M, there's oil money.
There's big money in Texas.
There's big money. And if that money is going to begin to get siphoned down to the players, it's going to make those programs more likely to jump over top of Alabama in college football. And Nick Saban knows that. And that's why he was caught. He was heard on a microphone talking to, I believe, Alabama boosters.
Yes, he was.
Essentially making the case that I need more money. If you want me to continue to rule college football, I need more money. Texas A&M, he said it, bought all their players. Those were Saban's words. Bought all their players. And then, yesterday, Texas A&M coach Jimbo Fisher said this.
It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organization. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. They broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, it's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it.
That's Jimbo Fisher. I'm not a Jimbo Fisher guy because he's he's Florida State and then he's A&M. Like he's not the rebel I'm looking for in college football.
No, he is not the rebel.
I think he's really just the guy that happens to be in the position to take advantage of the new system, the new rules. I think that's really all he is. But he's right. I think he's on the right side of this. Saban, what I think he is getting at there, Jimbo Fisher, about like the things Saban has done, I think, and I'm not, again, this big college football fan or by any means an expert, but I believe what he is referring to is Nick Saban's gray shirting, which essentially is an incoming college freshman who postpones his enrollment in classes until the second term of his freshman year. So they don't take classes in their fall term. And that allows the college athletes 5 years to compete instead of four. And it's legal, but I was reading about this the other day that always has kind of rubbed other college football coaches the wrong way. Because it is a little scummy. It's a little sneaky. And Saban, that's kind of how he built up Alabama. So I think that's what Jimbo Fisher is referring to.
Well, it's definitely that. It is also Nick Saban essentially said the quiet part out loud.
Mm-hmm.
NILs are a thing now, and I'm all for it. Because essentially what it is, well, now we can just pay you up front. I am a Texas fan.
Yep.
But I also like the history of college football in the state of Texas because it is incredibly scummy, and I find it fascinating. And you're absolutely right. Like Jimbo Fisher is in the perfect position to take advantage of the NILs now that they are a thing.
Yeah.
And Nick Saban even was saying that to local business owners in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, his main base of boosters in Alabama. Paying players has always been a thing in college football and college basketball, but predominantly college football. It's always been a thing. And so Nick Saban really sounded like a hypocrite when he said, you know, oh, well, Texas A&M just bought other players. And it's like, Nick, all of you have. Yes. All of you. Winning college football is essentially who cheats the best for a long time.
It came out in that, remember the FBI wiretapping thing with, was it Stephen Miller, the Arizona coach of college basketball?
Yep.
It came out in that investigation that a bench Creighton player was getting $100,000.
And I don't bat an eye to that. That makes complete sense.
And think about that. Think about the money. Think about the value that these players possess.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
A Creighton bench college basketball player cost $100,000. That's in college basketball at a sizable program, not a powerhouse, and not a star player. Six figures.
Yep.
That's the value that is placed on these players. Why? Because as I mentioned, these things, which was hidden in wrapped in amateurism for a century, which was all fraudulent. What we're now seeing is these players do have that value. And what I see in Nick Saban, in many ways, is just an old man that is complaining that things have changed.
Well, I mean, look at Dabo Swinney and Clemson.
That's exactly the guy I was getting to.
He has been so against the NILs, and it's like, Dabo, you, and all credit to him in his early years of Clemson, Clemson was a fine program. It was not this.
It wasn't.
NFL factory it has become. You had to pay for some of those players to come to South Carolina. You had to. It was not the major college town. I mean, they obviously had their version of Death Valley, and they had their traditions and all that stuff, but it was not.
Right.
You know, Alabama's always had great history, but it was not Miami. It was not USC. It was not Michigan and Ohio State. And it's like, you guys just, we all know you're cheating or that you did cheat. So stop trying to be like I never cheated. My program was perfect. Stop it.
Sweeney, by the way, the quote that he said 7 years ago was that if players ever got paid, he would go do something else.
Yeah, and look at where he is. He's still there.
He's still there.
Still there.
But he said he would go do something else. The idea of sharing the wealth with the players was something that offended Dabo Swinney so much that he was willing to put it out there in front of a microphone. I would go do something else if I had to share this money. No, you don't get the Subway commercials. I get the Subway commercials.
I have to be the star of the program.
You don't get to be on the billboard for the car dealership in town. You don't get that. I get that. That's to me what that sounds like.
Well,
that's
to
me what a lot of all of this sounds like, but from not more so Sweeney than Saban, but I think Saban is kind of letting it out there a little bit that this is how he feels about NIL, the new way college sports are going to work. And I think it sounds like a bitter old man that is having his power threatened.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, they're both also going to deal with the fact that their boosters are not as wealthy as the Ohio States, the Michigans, the USC's and the Texas schools. Texas A&M, Texas, Baylor. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, is a Michigan alum. It's like half the reason he wants Tom Brady to be a part owner with him. Yes. It's half the reason he wanted him to play on his team.
Might be the whole reason.
So you're telling me he won't spend a few million on a 5-star quarterback, from down south, from Florida, from Texas, who, football meant more? Because, that's the SEC saying is it means more here. I mean, no one's been, really hiding that they cheat.
Right.
It's never really been a thing. But now these smaller schools, Alabama's located in Tuscaloosa. Clemson, is right outside of Columbia, South Carolina.
Yep.
They don't have the same booster power, which is why Nick Saban goes out to his booster, his base, and says, guys, I need you to open up your checkbooks. They may not be able to.
Right.
Truthfully, they may not be able to.
I think at the end of all of this, it would be a one-year thing. I might root for Texas A&M. They might become my team just for this season because of, and I didn't really need another reason to villainize Alabama. I mean, the only thing I've really ever had a rooting interest in college football is you're rooting against Alabama. You're rooting for them to lose because you're always on top. And you think you're the best in the world, and, in many years they have been, and they've earned that. But you root against those teams. And this is another reason for me to root against Alabama, and it's another reason to root for Texas A&M, because it sounds to me like it would drive Nick Saban crazy if Texas A&M leapfrogged them and became a powerhouse and won the national championship.
It'll be interesting.
I think
they've had two really, really good recruiting classes in a row because of the NILs and them really, being allowed to really push how much power they have. So I'd be interested in it. And to be fair, as a Texas fan, I really want Texas and A&M to start playing each other again.
Yep.
For the rivalry. I mean, Texas is going to the SEC, which I think is just a boneheaded decision, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'd love for that rivalry to come back, and I'd love for, Texas to actually get a player drafted in the NFL. They didn't have a single one this year.
Yeah.
So I'd love for that stuff.
They didn't have
back.
A single player in the entire draft, not even like seventh round.
Nothing. They have really good players now. Bijan Robinson might be a Heisman candidate.
Okay,
potentially even a Heisman favorite. Quinn Ewers, the mullet quarterback, came over from Ohio State and then a transfer. That's kind of exciting. But it's been a huge down years.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get more into college football just because of all of this, because it's always been gross to me. The player part of it and the corruption, the not paying players part of it, the corruption throughout the sport, the cheating allegations, the vacating titles every single year. Someone's got a banner they got to take down. Just all of it has always been so stupid to me. And it has mostly been because of the NCAA and the rules in which that were in place, the pretending to be an amateur sport when, as we're seeing now, it is, every single year, look at those charts, those maps of the highest paid state employee in every state, and in like 45 of the 50 states is a college football coach. Why? It's a corporation. Whether or not it is officially labeled as one or not, these programs are big enough to be listed on the NASDAQ. And to pretend that it's amateurism has always just been so gross to me. But now that is going away, now that we are admitting to what we are, what college football is, I think it's going to be easier to consume. I think it'll be easier for me personally to get into it. And maybe this will be where I'm finally able to choose a team. And USC might still be the front runner for that, but A&M, because of this Saban thing yesterday, I'm intrigued. I could get into that. But I need it to continue to be bitter. I need it to continue to be back and forth.
Oh, it'll be bitter.
Saban's apologizing today, isn't he? Or saying that I shouldn't have singled anybody out.
Yeah, he's trying to apologize yesterday.
I don't want that.
It doesn't matter. Jimbo Fisher's the relationship's dead. He's all in on the I hate you kind of deal.
Well, that's good. I like that. I want someone to keep the hate flowing. Hate can get you into sports. I mentioned yesterday, the reason I started following the NBA was because I hated the Miami Heat when LeBron went there. So I could use a villain, and One way to find a team might just be to pick the rival of your villain. And Alabama is my villain. It's most people's villains, probably.
So, I mean, realistically, you should either be an A&M fan because of recent, you know, events, or an Auburn fan. I think that's where you should be.
Auburn has always been intriguing to me. Yeah. Like, Iron Bowl, I'm always rooting for Auburn. Always rooting for Auburn. But again, I think I want to avoid the SEC in general. I think I want to avoid the SEC.
You're going to have a lot more fun with draft time, though. If you dive into the SEC football, you're going to have a lot more fun because you're going to know guys that, you know, coming out next year where you're like, I can't wait for this guy to be in the draft.
On the other hand, though, I could become the only guy that knows what's going on in the Pac-12.
Like, you could,
because
I have no idea.
This receiver from Oregon State, I saw him play twice this year. You don't know who he is. SEC, that ground's been
covered.
Everyone knows. Everyone's got their flag planted in the SEC. Let me go out. Where is their land available?
We got to pick you a Mountain West team. That's what we got to do.
I'm not going that far. I don't think I'm going that far. I need Power Five at least. One of my best friends is a Wake Forest alum and a huge Wake Forest fan. Like, they've always been a team I've been intrigued by, but they're just, I also need the potential to win. Like, everything. Like, the national championship. And no offense to Wake Forest, but
I don't know. Watching his Twitter account every Saturday for Wake Forest games, I became a closeted Wake Forest fan just for him.
Jordan Hanskin, my co-host on Locked On Sabres, is who I'm talking about, by the way. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll move past this. The Amerks, they're still playing. How fun is it, and what does it mean? Could it mean anything for the Sabre season next year? Optimism for the Sabres next year. We'll talk a little bit about the Amerks when we come back. I've got Brian Koziel coming up at 10:45 to talk about the PGA Championship, and then my brother Lou DiBiase at 11, Locked On Eagles here at WGR as well. A year ago, we ranked our top 20, 25 and under quarterbacks in the league. We're going to go with 26, same pool players. We are going to re-rank those guys. Coming up at 11. All that on the way here on The Extra Point Show. Joe DiBiase and Zach Jones here on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
From the near side, puts it high in the air to center ice. Bouncing puck, Rusek has it over the line. Drops it off on top, wrist shot. They score! Malone, a wrister inside the left post by the right leg of Dawes. Amerks have taken the lead. Malone puts the Amerks up 3-2.
Don Stevens, play-by-play man of the Rochester Americans. The Amerks still going. It's May 20th, and they're still playing playoff hockey. How about it? I'm very happy, especially because now I feel like I'm going to have the opportunity to get to one of those games. I wanted to go Sunday or Tuesday last week, but I had prior obligations, was not able to get there. Those games look fun. They look good on the ice. They are young. They are fast, offensive, and unlike, there's always been my criticism of being interested in the Amerks. Not criticism of being interested. I mean, if you're interested in something, be interested in it. But in past years, when it's looked like they've been good, my attitude has always been, who are the top players? Are they 27-year-old AHL veterans? Because if that's the case, what do I care? This is why I was never, you know, Chris Taylor got fired probably undeservingly. of being the Amherst coach. And now, good to see he's laying on his feet. I think he's the assistant coach in New Jersey for Lindy Ruff. But at the time, it was like Chris Taylor got fired. This is like the worst move I've ever seen. Like, this is horrific. And I was always treating it as such as, okay, like, fine. I understand that he didn't deserve to be fired, but where are all these prospects that I've had developed that are now contributing at the NHL level? Now, I think that was probably more so the drafting and the roster decisions by the GMs at the time and not necessarily the AHL coach. But the only guy that really had come through Rochester to become an impact player on the Sabres was Victor Olofsson. And I've always thought Olofsson really has never developed much. I mean, maybe this year was the first time 5-on-5 he became a better all-around player, because he arrived on our doorstep in North America as a guy with an elite shot and not much else. And until this season, he was an elite shot with not much else. What did he really develop? So I've always treated an AHL farm system and the interest I have in it in terms of what are they doing to contribute to the long-term picture in the NHL. All well and good for you to win in the playoffs and become successful in the AHL by just having Seth Griffiths and Brian Flynn's, you know, these Zach Dalpe types, these guys that will play 20 games in the NHL, but they'll play mostly in the AHL, and they'll be great AHL players. But you know they're never going to be NHLers. That's easy. That should be easy. You know what's impactful to the whole organization? Is to get good, and to get good with your important players in the AHL, being prospects and being guys that you can count on in the NHL level for years to come. And that's why, for me, I'm all in on intrigue for this team, this specific Amherst team right now, going through this run. They're only in the second round, by the way. Is that nuts? Doesn't it feel like this has been going on for like 2 months?
Howard was saying it too. He goes, this feels like, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals, and it's like it's technically the quarterfinals they're
right.
Going into now.
They have 12 wins to go still. It feels like they should have 7 or 8. But only the second round, because they had that play-in tournament. But look at the guys contributing. It's not all the kids. Arttu Ruotsalainen, who I don't even, maybe he's making a case to get a second look. I still do not believe that he'll get a long look at the NHL. I don't think he's a part of the Sabres' long-term plans. And he's been great. He's one guy where, AHLer, that probably doesn't mean a lot to the organization, that is helping to keep the ball rolling here. Scoring a lot of goals, important goals, tied the game last night in the third period. But Peterka, especially right now, because Peterka seems to be the one that is thriving. Quinn, still playing well, but he was like the best player in the AHL all season. He might not be doing that right now. He's playing fine. I'm not saying he's playing bad, but it seems like Peterka is the one that has been dynamite in the last 2 weeks. And Peyton Krebs, who he didn't have to be down there in the first place. You know, he had played most of the season with Buffalo. So for him to go down there to see the value of a playoff run, to be a part of it, and to contribute the way he's contributing as a playmaker. I mean, those are the guys. Samuelson's still not playing yet. Lukanen's still not playing yet. You'd like to think, like to hope, that one or both can get into the next round against Laval. But Peterka is the one I've got my eye on the most right now. Krebs, I was already good on Krebs. I already knew that he's in the NHL. He's got a spot for next year. We know that there's upside there. We just got to see him do it. Peterka, I mean, the last time I talked to Paul about this, which was what, a week ago? Week and a half ago? Did we say he was like 50-50 to be on the team next year?
Yeah, it's pretty much about that.
I think he is making it, and for good reason, harder and harder to not pencil him in to next year's opening night lineup. To me, everything he's needed to do to be a part of this team at the beginning of next season, he's doing. He won a job, won a spot out of camp last year, played well in the preseason. They said, we're going to send you down to Rochester anyway. He said, all right. He went down there. He was a point-a-game player, all-rookie team for the AHL. He's playing great in the postseason, carrying the puck, scoring, playmaking, all of it. That's a kid that you want. You want to be an organization where when a prospect has that career trajectory, that the next step will always be available to him. This has been my criticism of the Sabres under past regimes, is the kids never have a shot. You never have an opportunity to see what they are, even prospects that rate far below what Paterka is. Gouley, for instance. Gouley was a second-round pick. He was like the only defensive prospect in the organization for a long time, Brendan Gouley. And it took forever to call him up. It took like 2 years longer than it should have to see what he was on a game-to-game basis. And then, by that point, I mean, you could have figured out what you had figured out in 2019, 2 years prior. You want to be the team like Pittsburgh is, where Brian Rust, I mean, would Brian Rust have ever become what he's become in Pittsburgh and Buffalo? Because in Pittsburgh, you got to have that door open. You got to have that third, fourth line spot always available to someone that's playing really well in the AHL. And the Sabres for a long time have been a team where that door's not open. It's slammed shut. What I hope is at the beginning of next season, at least for this one individual, make it so that that door is wide open. Wide open. Give him every opportunity he can, because from what I've seen of J.J. Paterka in Rochester during this playoff run, that guy is an NHL player right now. 803-0550 is the phone number. Really fun to see the Amherst playoff run. Big win against Utica. A lot of social media beef, too, huh? Do we think Utica started that, though?
I don't know if they did. All I know is Rochester definitely finished it.
They definitely finished it. And listen, if you're the Utica Comets, you can't start a Twitter beef when the easiest comeback of all time is just sitting there in the GIF option of Dwight Schrute in the office and a fake mustache saying, we will burn Utica to the ground. You can't start a Twitter beef.
You can't do it because
you can't.
It's there.
Right. That GIF is there. It exists. You're just going to get hammered with it over and over and over and over and over. It's a great GIF, too. It's perfect. You can't start a Twitter beef when that is out there. You can't. We'll take a timeout here. We'll talk some golf. PGA Championship is ongoing right now. We'll update you on a little bit and also what happened in round one. Brian Koziel joins the show next. Before we get to my brother Lou DiBiase, ranking quarterbacks under the age of 26 at 11. All that coming your way here on the Extra Point Show. Joe DiBiase and Zach Jones here on WGR. All right, welcome back to the Extra Point Show. Joe DiBiase on WGR. Sal Capaccio off today. We've got the PGA Championship ongoing in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which no one has figured out still what region it's in. We had someone tweet at us that they live in Oklahoma and they consider it the Southwest.
See, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, all right.
I never considered
Oklahoma's
for a second
a
that it would
southern.
Be Southwest. I would think Southern or Midwest.
They don't have like that Southern city, though. I don't consider Oklahoma City or Tulsa like Southern cities. And I never will.
That's true. Brian Koziel joins us now on the Wester Hotline. Brian McIlroy, right? That's the story of round one. I mean, he's not only because he's the leader, but it's been 8 years since he won a major, and this is kind of the flip of what he usually does, right? Normally, he struggles out of the gates and then makes up for it at the end.
Yeah, we're definitely getting a flip of script from Roy this week. The last time he's gotten off to good starts like this in majors, he's won. Now, it's been quite a while since that's happened, but for him to do this, considering what he's been doing, you know, for those that have been listening to our conversations with Mike and Chris in the afternoon, McIlroy's really downfall in majors has been that his first round, he just shoots himself out of it. He's had, you know, going into the week, he was 35 over in round one and then 68 under in rounds 2, 3, 4. So I mean, that stat is just jarring of how much better he's been going forward. Now, is a piece of that because he's down and he's behind, so he plays more aggressive, more loosely? Who knows? Today we'll obviously maybe get to find a little bit of that out because he'll be playing with the lead or within the lead if somebody ends up passing him here this morning. But for Rory yesterday, as good of a round as you could have played, the par threes are super hard on this course. There were two of them, two bogeys that he had on 6 and 8. They were both long par threes. But other than that, I thought he played really, really, really good golf yesterday, kept himself out of trouble. And that's been the really most important thing. The guys that have been struggling, they have not been accurate off the tee, and Rory was really good at that yesterday.
I think, did I see he had two drives of 378?
Yes, I saw that.
Some of these
holes have some dog legs to them, and he's cutting that off, but he has been really, really good driving the ball. Back in his day, you know, I shouldn't say back in his day, not that long ago, when he was winning those majors, he was driving the ball the best on tour. I still think if Rory has got his, quote, A game with his driver, I still think he's the best player in the world. So if he drives the ball really well these next few days, then I think he'll be the guy to beat.
Is this course, I mean, I'm seeing a lot about long par fours, only a couple of par fives, but is this a course where, to you, it's distance is going to be a lot more important than it normally is?
Yeah, well, you know what? I think I'll shift a little and say yes, but I'll also say with the wind, accuracy is going to be maybe more vital than maybe I thought coming in. Today, guys are struggling with the wind, and especially on approach shots, like the ball is wavering one way or the other, or it's coming up short, maybe where they weren't planning on it happening. So I think how people deal with the wind here, at least today, to keep themselves with a chance to win, I think will be very vital. A guy like McIlroy, of course, grew up in Ireland, played a lot of European Tour golf where the winds are probably a little bit more prominent than they are on the American Tour, on the PGA Tour. So I have no thoughts that he can't handle playing in the wind. He knows how to, if he has to bring in the ball low or high or whatever he has to do, I think he'll be able to handle that pretty well. But the length on some of these, I think, is really the par threes. That's where I think it's going to be a major, major issue, where you three of the four are over 220 yards. Like, for us amateur guys, think about that. Like, to me, that's the hardest hole on the golf course. If I've got a par three that's like 230, the chances of, you know, that particular shot off the tee, like, that's a really, really challenging shot. Mm-hmm. Not to minimize these other holes. The two par fives, too, are not eagle holes either, or eagle opportunities. They're both over 600. So it's a long course on the threes and the fives. The fours is maybe where they can make up for it a little, and they've had some holes where they can get some birdies on some of the shorter par fours.
Brian Koziol on the Western Hotline for a couple more minutes. Be sure to tune in to Tee to Green tomorrow on the PGA Championship with Brian at 7 o'clock here on WGR. So McIlroy at the top, Justin Thomas at 4-under, Joaquin Niemann and Will Zalatoris, Tom Hoge also all one shot back at 4-under. Thomas is out there right now. Zalatoris, I feel like I see his name at every major leaderboard.
He's a guy that still is looking for his first PGA. But he's been good. He's had a chance to win in majors more than he has in any just the regular tour.
Right.
He has been all of a sudden just kind of came on the scene last year. He's had two really good Masters. And in majors, yeah, he's been a factor. The part of Zalatoris's game where he doesn't win is because he doesn't putt well. On tour, he's way, way, way down in all of the major putting categories. So if he is just a, quote, average putter this week, the rest of his game has been on display so far to be very good. So, to me, if he putts well, he's got a chance to win.
How about Tiger Woods' first round? I mean, I guess the story, I mean, the score wasn't great, 74, but the story seems to be limping in the final nine holes, looking like he was favoring that leg. He really confirmed it, actually, after an interview in ESPN. I mean, not that we're really guessing. I think he was going to make the cut anyway, but it doesn't sound good on him and his health status right now.
No, it doesn't. And it's too bad because, you know, thinking that he's playing this week, there was some excitement of, okay, he got through the Masters. that was a really, really tough walk. This could maybe be an easier walk. Plus, he's 6 weeks stronger. Mm-hmm. This would be a good opportunity for maybe could Tiger get in contention. And then how he started, Joe. Birdies the first hole of the week when he played yesterday, starting on the back nine. And then he was two under on his first four, and his name's on the leaderboard. And you're like, okay, maybe he's got some magic in him. But he was so inaccurate off the tee down the stretch yesterday. So, I mean, we talked about that to start. Accuracy off the tee is how guys got in trouble yesterday. So for Tiger, he's going to have to be better off the tee if he's going to have any chance today, I think. And then, you know, you get in that rough. Now you're hacking out of there. All of a sudden, the leg and the strength and all that becomes maybe even more of an issue. So for Tiger today, I know it sounds easy. Hit it in the fairway, however you got to do it, and then I think he'll have a chance to give himself a reasonable opportunity to make the cut and play on the weekend.
And then finally, Brian, like dark horse that's not necessarily right at the top of the leaderboard. I think I saw that no of the last 12 major winners all have been four shots or closer to the lead after the first round. So am I right to just basically be staring at whoever's under par right now is the guys I would think can pull this off?
Probably. I think if you're not under par right now, or if you're not under par by the end of the day, then I guess I would say maybe you probably don't have a good chance to win. I know there's not a ton of guys that are under par, but if McIlroy goes out and even just shoots even today, which, again, not an easy thing to do because of what the conditions are doing, but I think that's got to be the goal. If you're anybody thinking you got a chance to win, you've got to be under par at the end of this day. If I was going to pick right now on somebody besides McIlroy, Thomas looks really, really locked in, and he's had the tougher of the conditions. Yesterday, after late, that group had the windier conditions. Obviously, this morning, they're getting some very, very tough winds. So if he's able to grind through today and be maybe in one of the final couple of groups, I really like Thomas's chances going into the weekend. He had said, too, kind of funny, his dad is his swing coach, longtime PGA professional. He had said that he's like, I need my dad to be my coach and not my dad. He goes, I need him to help me. Sometimes, you know, he wants to prop up my ego a little. He goes, I need him to tell me when I need to fix something or when something's not looking good. And he said he's really been disappointed with his performances in majors. After he won the PGA in 2017, he's kind of been just kind of quiet in majors. He said for him, he thinks that he's underachieved. So this is a guy that values so much the majors. He's very close with Tiger, so he's got that same mentality. I think JT's super likable and fun to watch. But for the talent that he has, for him to only have one major at this point, I think maybe I would slightly agree with him that maybe he has underachieved in majors.
Mm-hmm. I could go for that. I could go for a nice big round by Victor Hovland today. Just waiting for that. There is a 6-under, 63, 64 round in him in a major that I'm just waiting for him to pull out. So I'm kind of hoping that that's what we get today. He tees off at, let's see, when does Hovland tee off at? 225? It's a little bit later in the day. Conditions might be tough. All right.
This is not a dark horse, but Cam Smith yesterday had one bad hole that really derailed his round. And when he's putting well, he's the best putter on tour. He tees off later today, too. They are expecting the winds to slowly subside. So if you're playing very late, which Smith is, he doesn't tee off till 225, maybe give him a little look this afternoon.
Where are you guys at for tee to green tomorrow morning?
We are at Niagara Frontier Golf Club in Youngstown.
Okay.
We love going there. Beautiful place to play. So we'll be on a lot of PGA Championship talk, a lot of course talk tomorrow starting at 7.
All right. Can't wait. Brian, thanks for joining us. And if we don't hear from you later in the day, we show up in the Bulldog, which I'd imagine we do. We'll hear from you tomorrow at 7.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks. Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline again. Tee to green tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Tune in for that. We'll take a timeout. Quarterback rankings. Who doesn't love quarterback rankings? However you're going to specify the pool. 26 and under. There's a guy that I just realized is not going to qualify for the list that I have in my list. So I got to make an edit here. My brother Lou DiBiase of WGR and Locked On Eagles is going to rank some quarterbacks. 26 and under. We did this a year ago. Same pool of players. That's on the way next here on WGR.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way.
Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.